Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Folks, welcome back to another episode of the Hurricane H Show, where we bring you the real, the raw, and the revolutionary. I'm your host, Hurricane H, and today's guest is a living legend in the words of direct selling and network marketing. He's a best-selling author, a 40 years plus year veteran of the industry, and the voice behind the hit podcast, Leaving Nothing to Chance, where he shares powerful conversations with some of the most respected leaders in entrepreneurship. And without any further ado, I have with me John Solder. John, welcome, man.
Hurricane, it's so nice to see you again. How are you?
Great, terrific, and I'm going to enjoy this discussion with you because, you know, especially when I have a fellow podcaster who knows how this works, and you and I, we had a bit of a chat about how you started this thing and, you know, how it is today, and I mean, it's pretty good stuff that you do. I mean, your podcast is pretty awesome too, and, you know, yeah, I want people to actually reach out and check it out as well, and the work you've done. I mean, I think we're gonna have a terrific discussion about, you know, the world that you've been, you know, in from just the selling, the marketing, the multi-marketing level, and all the stuff that you've done, and years and years and years of working it, and success stories there, as well as, you know, being an author and just the talk show host, if you want to call it that way. So let's start with the, you know, first things first, you know, the story, how it all began back in the days and got you into the world of sales and multi-level marketing, because there is a big thing about multi-marketing. People don't understand it well. There is a lot, you know, a lot of controversy sometimes about it. Maybe, maybe not. So enlighten, you know, the audiences, let us know. And we can also touch on anything else you want on that.
Sure. Well, it is controversial and probably rightfully so, because like anything in life, when it's done right, it's amazing. When it's done wrong, it can cause challenges. So we'll talk about that. But yeah, I'll tell you, my story started not too far from your home there in Jersey. I attended Seton Hall University in South Orange. I go Pirates. And I was about to graduate. This was in 1983. And April, to be exact. And I was looking for a job. I was working part-time selling health club memberships, but I knew that wasn't going to be what I would do for a living. I had a degree in journalism that I was going to be getting from the hall. And April 18th, 1983, a guy named Tom Husted, who's a living legend in the sport of wrestling in New Jersey, who I had wrestled with in high school, came into the gym I was working out at. And he tells me that, hey, I started my own business and you can join me if you want. And, you know, now the only challenge was, it was $32 in 1983, and $32 in 1983 for me was a lot of money. So I said, Tom, I can write you a check, but I can't cover it till Friday. This was like a Wednesday or Tuesday, I don't remember. And he said, yeah, no problem. So I gave him a check, And I started my first business. There it was, April 18th, 1983. And I said, Tom, what do you do? He says, well, you know, you just tell people about these products and you start using them yourself. And, you know, I was an athlete. So, yeah, great. You know, protein powders, energy products, et cetera. The kind of products kind of made sense. And by May 18th, 1983, when I graduated from Seton Hall, I had made $800. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot today, but in 1983, $800 would be about $3,000 today. For a new college graduate starting their own business, I'm doing really well, but I'm still looking for a job. I mean, my parents were, you know, of the mindset, you're going to get a job. Like, we spent all this money for you to go to college, you're getting a job. And lo and behold, one of those paradigm moments happened in my life. And that's that Ronald Reagan wound up speaking at our college commencement at Seton Hall. And 1 month to the day since I started my business, by the way, May 18th, 1983 is when he spoke. And he spoke about the fact that, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but 1983, the economy was still in really rough shape. Okay, really rough shape. Interest rates were still pretty high and they were fixing it, but it still hadn't really caught on yet. So I'm looking for a job. Not getting one, not getting anywhere with that. And he speaks about the fact that way back in 1932, when he graduated college, similar economy, he went back to being a lifeguard in Illinois, and he runs into a successful businessman, and he says to that businessman, what should I do? I'm looking for a job. I, you know, lifeguarding is a, you know, summer job, basically, and I need to find my way. And this guy, they used to call Reagan Dutch, and those guys, he said, Dutch, what you need to do is find a business you like and then find a mentor to teach you it. Well, in Reagan's case, he liked broadcasting. So he became a broadcaster for an affiliate of the Chicago Cubs. I think it was in Iowa. And lo and behold, he was good at it. Somebody from Westinghouse eventually hears him and says, this guy's got a good voice. He's a young guy. Let's bring him out to California and give him a screen test. Well, you know, as you say, one thing led to another. He winds up president. But his advice about finding a mentor made sense, because I'm starting to put I'm trying to put two and two together. And all of a sudden I'm saying, well, I made $800 just kind of fooling around, telling some friends about these products. What if I got a little bit more serious? Fast forward about another 30 days, I wound up going up to Hartford, Connecticut. Now, Hurricane, I'd never been to a business meeting in my life. Okay, I owned one suit. It didn't even fit me right. So I'm like, I'm going to a business meeting. I need a suit, but I don't have one. So I guess I won't wear one. I go to this business meeting. There's about 1,000 people packed into this place in Hartford. And the guy doing the meeting said something that was profound. And it was this. It was, for things to change, you have to change. And for things to get better, you have to get better. Now, it turned out Jim Rohn had written those words, but I didn't know who Jim Rohn was. I didn't know who Larry Thompson was. I didn't know who anybody was. All I knew was, those words made a lot of sense to me, because I said, you know, rather than blaming my parents or my sisters or my girlfriend or the economy or who the president is or who the president isn't or who the governor of New Jersey is at that time or all the other things that could be excuses in life to not achieve, I said, you know what I need to do? I need to work on this brand. I need to get my butt to the library. I mean, I went to college, but nobody ever taught me how to make money there. Okay, I got a great education at the Hall, but nobody ever said, hey, John, here's how you make money. So all of a sudden I said, let me focus on how to make money. But to do that, I need to work on my skills. And I started going to the library, like every single day, just about, that the library was open for the, you know, the free public library. I was there and I was reading books by Earl Nightingale and Mary Kay Ash and Dr. Norman Vincent Peale and all the other people who had written anything about self-development, business, you know, where it was all kind of tied together, kind of like your show or my show, where, you know, multitude of things that these people could discuss. And I started working on me. And by 1989, I made my first $1 million in network marketing. So I was, you know, an overnight success story that took 7 years almost.
So John, there's a lot of stuff. And by the way, you know, we'll touch on that note that you just said, the overnight success, you know, for 7 years, because I think that's really where people get it wrong. They think that there is such thing as overnight. So we'll touch on that. But really, I mean, it's funny. I'm listening to you. And then I'm putting your podcast show title to the work you've done all this world. And now I see where the title comes from. I mean, talking about that first day, that first business meeting, and you're hearing that nothing happens without you changing and willing to change the idea, right? And again, you can't leave things to change, which is you know, your work, right? That's what you do now. And that's really is. There's no chance about success. It's hard work. You got to make some changes. And as Jim Rohn says, and I love the guy, and I follow a lot of his work myself, is the idea that you got to start working here. You're number one. You got to change things here. You got to build your skills. You got to improve your stuff. And by the way, I think Jim Rohn's story is the same. Like he got went bust, whatever, and then he had to change the skills, and then he turned things around, and now he is who he is. You know, basically everybody quotes, you know, him, and it's just amazing and how popular he is, and his real mojo is big. I mean, you follow his stuff, you will succeed. I mean, there's no doubt. Yeah. It's like the success formula. Stepped over and over, talking about franchise. I mean, it does. Now, in your case, it's amazing you said something also that is, you know, very powerful. And I think it's, you know, there's a joke there because you talked about library. I mean, what is that today? I mean, you know, everybody is using AI and using all the stuff today. It's a little different. We have, you know, literally everything on the palm of our hands today. But you're right. You know, people that at the time were supposed to go there, and that's where you do all the improvements and the reading and the books and stuff. But the concept really, it took, you know, you doing the necessary. And it's funny you said something about you took a good education, however nobody taught you how to really make the money with that. I mean, and that's actually a concept people don't get. You can go to business school, they're going to give you all the concepts, you know, if you call it that way, right? You're going to put all the practice stuff, you know, later, but really in the courses and the stuff you study in all the different concepts, formulas, this, that, the structures, business law here, this school, how they do like Harvard school, business school, whatever. And you learn all these things, but they do not prepare you for the real world unless you actually get into the real world and practice it. And no one, and that's the thing, like people are like shy about this. It's the reality of things. You know, as a matter of fact, you've been around long enough in terms of business world, I've been long enough into corporate, and I can tell you one thing. The first thing people ask you, and it's a true story, my best friend and my partner in business, you know, he got himself a degree in accounting. He went to find an accounting job. He never got an accounting job. He wound up in sales, and we grew up together in the ranks, you know, of an industry, right? And because that's what it is. You go look for a job, you wind up, you know, not getting the job because they want experience. You can't even get somewhere unless, well, how much time do you have in this? I don't know. I have no clue. Very few people will actually give you the opportunity to start. Now, I want to go to what you said, which is something for everybody that is looking to grow themselves and improve and really get into business for their own sales if they wanted to. Because again, you know, I actually use this in training many times, and I ask my teams, and I say, if you were given $1 million right now, would you start your business? That's one. And I ask them the same, a different set of question. And I say, you know, what would you start your business? Like, well, I'd love to. It's like, so the money. And then I go with the $1 million question. It's like, oh yeah. And then what kind of business, you know, I don't know yet, but I'll start a business. Why? Because I want to be independent. I want to do stuff. Okay. Well, when you join corporate, so my philosophy was, if you join a team and you're not really starting your own company, well, if you take it as it is yours, right, you succeed. So it doesn't matter what position you're in, especially in sales, right? You treat yourself as Me Inc. And that's the way, you know, I've always proposed that. You know, yeah. It's your own business. You're in sales. The sky's the limit. You go for it and you make it happen. You're the company. You're the CEO. You're running everything. We're just giving you the support. We're your financial institution as a corporate. And that's actually true for corporations and true for entrepreneurship, which is the case that you've done. You met a guy. Here's an opportunity. And the money was a problem. Guess what? You didn't say, oh my God, I can't do this, I'm out. You said, I'm going to write you a check, let's make it happen. That's what actually also, I guess, makes a difference between success stories and not so success stories. People who actually pursue things and take the risk and the challenges and put whatever their money where their mouth is, you know, get further. People that say, oh no, I can't do it, it's I find excuses, that's where they are. You can either have excuses or solutions. You can't have both. And that's all there is. So these are, I purposely highlighted some of this stuff that you just, you know, I guess, you know, shared with our audiences, because these are powerful items that I think, if applicable, everybody that's out there can use them in real life. And they can actually take them to the bank because they are real effective and they work. And you are a true story about it. And here's the funny thing. Like you mentioned $800. You're right. $800 back then is a lot of money. Out of college, it's a lot of money. And that $800 was the road or the foundation to that first million and so on and so forth. And so people don't realize you got to start somewhere. As you say, it's no chance. There is no, nothing that you did was a chance. There's circumstances, conditions, but you take the opportunities out there and you work them your way and you make it happen. And that's exactly what you did. And people sometimes they, I don't know what's going on. It's bad. Is this take risks, folks?
Well, I mean, it was baby steps. It was baby steps. And my first company, by the way, got in trouble with the FDA. So my income was going like this. And all of a sudden there was some stuff in early 84 with the Food and Drug Administration. And all of a sudden it was like, boy, you couldn't give away the product at that point. So all of a sudden it was like, wow, what do I do? Next great thing that happened in my life, I went to work in the insurance industry. And I said, okay, oh man, maybe my parents were right. Maybe I shouldn't do this multi-level stuff. I went to work for MetLife. And long story short, I got a great financial education. And here's one of the great things, and you will love this being in you know, all the businesses that you're in and the people that you lead. I go to a meeting with that company. Now I'm a little older. I started my first business, you know, I'm a kid. Now, yeah, I got a couple of years, you know, I'm like 24, you know, wouldn't we like to be 24 right now, right? But anyway, I go to this meeting in New York, and the top sales rep at MetLife at that time was a guy, and I'm not swearing, by the way, folks, this is a real name, Mehdi Fakhrizadeh, Persian name, okay? And anyway, I'll never forget that there's this guy, Bob Crimmins, who was like senior vice president of MetLife. And same thing like this meeting I went to a network market. It's like, you know, a couple thousand people in the room, agents, and you know, all sorts of people. And he had a great point, and it stayed with me all these years. Here's the point. He said, you know, I'm so busy a lot of times, I multitask. This was before cell phones. You know, I'm on the phone in one ear and I'm looking at a report and I'm talking to somebody and it's ha 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 ha. He says, but when Mehdi Fakhrizadeh calls, I don't look at anything. I put everything down and I pay attention. Because when you're top sales rep, and you can make that sales reps, folks, okay, if you're in sales management and you're leading people, when they call you, they're too busy to call you to discuss, you know, the ball game last night or the weather. When your top people call, you pay attention. And his point was, if Mehdi stops selling, I don't have a job. And I was like, wow, what a great lesson. And once again, you're a kid and you hear it and it takes you years to go and put it in a similar situation where you're like, when my top guys or gals call me, I pay attention. Because they don't call me to chew the fat. They call me because there's either not, there could be a great opportunity, by the way, too, that they're calling me about something that we need to do as a team. But a lot of times they're calling me because there's an issue. You know, there's an IT issue, there's you know, a shipping issue, that, you know, there's something going on that's affecting their business in a negative or adversarial way. So I, as the leader of that team, need to be proactive and listen to what they have to say. Now, if it's the same person calling every day and all it is a complaint session, well, you know, you gotta cut that off because that costs everybody money, including them, and they don't realize you're doing them a favor by cutting them off, you know. But that was another just, it was a God thing, I got to tell you. I mean, the first thing was a God thing. The second thing was a God thing where it was like they put me in the right environment to hear somebody say something that impacted me that I could carry on and teach and coach all these years later and have other people probably coach. There's so many people teaching stuff that I created in network marketing that don't even know it came from me. And I don't care. You know, it's like flattering when I go, yeah, well, 1992, I created that. 1996, I created that. And it's great. It's flattering. And like I said, most of them don't even know who I am because it's generational. I taught somebody who taught somebody who taught somebody who taught somebody, you know, so they don't even know who the first guy necessarily was. And then, you know, my ego is not that big. I really could care less. To me, like I said, I just want to see people achieve. And to your point about network marketing, because you brought it up, and it's a fair thing. Here's how I see, and I really call it direct selling, because direct selling is everything from, you know, a gal who's got a product that she sells to her friends, you know, they've got a skin cream, for example, that she likes, or a hair care product, or a makeup, for example, from any of the companies that sell products like that. And she goes to work and she sells those products, right? Part-time, makes a little extra money. to the person like myself that's really built big networks and big businesses with this, okay, everybody's welcome. It's a big tent into the direct selling industry. That's a great thing. A lot of people get the wrong impression of network marketing because they buy the hype. And here's what I mean by that. The original companies, the original founders of the industry, okay, which were, and there's more people in this, but, you know, Mary Kay Ash with Mary Kay, Dr. Shackley with Shackley, Mark Hughes with Herbalife, Rich DeVos, Jay Van Andel with Amway, Art Williams with Primerica, okay, and Harlan Stonecipher with Prepaid Legal. And there were others, Bill Bailey, and there's some other names, okay? I'm leaving out a few people, but just for the sake of time. And your audience may not know these people anyway, so it's not that relevant. But those people believed, all of them, and most of them I knew at one point or another I met. They believed that the distributor was super important, number one, because every one of those people I mentioned started their own business. They were the first distributor. They were the first guy or the first gal to go out and say, hey, buy my whatever. And they knew the rejection that people like me, you know, have done for 42 years, right? They knew people said no. Even if it was, hey, it's my company and you're saying no to me. I don't want your stuff, right? I don't want your business. I'm not interested, right? And maybe it was their best friend or their sister, right? They understood that. Okay, and that was a good thing. Second to that, they also promoted, for the most part, that these were part-time businesses. These were side hustles. This was money to put into your SEP retirement account or your 401k or your Roth account or your kids' 529c accounts, right? Financial things. In other words, this was extra money. Originally, they used to call it pin money because women used to actually pin it inside their blouse so their husband didn't know that they made some extra money flogging whatever at work. And that became the Christmas money or the kids' violin lesson money, right? So the husband didn't know about it. It was extra. And that was very, very good. And that was very, very honorable. What happened somewhere in there was two things. Number one, investment bankers recognized that network marketing companies are tremendously profitable for the owners. And they started to buy up these companies. And they came from Wall Street. They had no idea what people like me do every day. And they had no interest in knowing what we do. They just looked at the bottom line numbers and said, hey, 100,000 people selling, you know, 1, 2, 3 widgets per month of this particular product makes a company a bunch of money. Great. And unfortunately, not all of them, but some of them came with the wrong rationale. I'm going to fund this on debt. I'm going to take out all the money. And I'm going to close the company down, or I'm going to change the compensation plan and take away from people who have built businesses for many, many years. And we've seen that bad movie the last couple of years. Okay. The last couple of years has been about 7 companies that have done that. But there's about 3,000 companies in the space, right? I mean, there's bad car dealers, right? There's bad travel agencies. There's bad insurance companies, okay, that don't honor their things. So those people did that, but that becomes the, oh, well, you know, if you join one of those companies, they're going to do that. It could happen. I'm not going to tell you it doesn't. I've had friends that have had, including Rebecca, have had incomes taken away from them by greedy SOBs that buy these companies for the wrong reasons, okay? We as an organization, as an industry, are pushing back against these investment bankers now, okay? Because we've seen the movie too many times. So we've seen that happen. But the other thing, that's a kind of like a macro problem. That's a problem if you're me and you're a big distributor in a company and you make your living from network marketing. The part-time person's still affected, but they probably have another source of income. But the other thing is unreal expectations. Hey, folks, I've worked hard. Okay, you deal with people that have made millions of dollars in network marketing. Okay, they've worked hard. They work just as hard as the guy who builds, you know, 17 Subway stores or 9 McDonald's or big insurance agencies. They work their butts off 80, 90 hours a week. Okay, they've earned their money. But what happens is somebody comes in and promotes to them the wrong way that's going to be you, but you're going to spend 5 hours a week doing what that guy does 80 hours a week. Well, do the math. If that guy's doing it 80 hours a week and he's talking to people every single day and he's running conference calls and everything else, he's stirring it up every day. If you're doing it 5 hours a week, it's unrealistic. It would be like, You know, you and I are both athletic guys. It'd be like the guy who goes to the gym, you know, after New Year's Eve, and he goes for 3 weeks and he disappears, that wants the gains that the guy who's there at 5 o'clock in the morning, you know, 3-4 mornings a week, you know, pumping iron or running or doing whatever they happen to be doing. I want the same gains as him, but I don't want to do the work. Well, you're not being realistic. You're not being fair to yourself. Now, that doesn't mean you couldn't morph into that guy that spends, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week in your business, okay? But start a direct selling business for the right reasons. Hey, I want to make part-time money to fund whatever, a vacation, a 529C, a SEP, a long-term care plan, family needs a new car. I mean, you know, do it for the right reasons without false expectations. Achieve that first goal. And then find another goal. You know, maybe this year was take the kids to Disney. Okay. Next year it might be, you know, take the family to Europe. I don't know. You know, like everybody's got their reasons why they need more money. But do it for the right reasons with the right expectations, frankly. And if you do it that way, then your business is successful. I've coached, I don't know how many millions of people. I mean, directly and indirectly, millions of people. The majority of them are part-time people, made some extra money. I'm proud of that legacy because how many people were able to send their kid to a better school as a result? So their kid got a better education, for example, or they were able to get out of maybe a crummy neighborhood and move a couple zip codes away to a safer neighborhood, right? Or whatever it is that they achieved. That I'm as proud of as I am the people that I coach that have become seven-figure earners in the industry. I'm proud of those people too, obviously, okay? But there's far less of them. You know, for every matey fuckazati, there's 1,000 guys selling life insurance, right? You know, same thing in anything in sales, right? You're going to have the elite guy or the elite gal, and that's great, you know, but there's a place for everybody in the direct selling industry. And my other advice to people, find a product you like. Like, don't sell something because your next door neighbor is selling it. If you don't like the product, don't sell it. Find something like that gentleman told Ronald Reagan years ago. Find something that you're passionate about. I like health and nutrition. Okay. I'm a nutrition junkie. All right. I have friends though that make a good money selling skincare. I got the top guy in Legal Shield, Brian Carell, is a dear friend of mine. He loves selling legal memberships. Okay. I got other friends over at Primerica. They love selling life insurance through network marketing. And I got other friends that are doing other things with water filters, for example, expensive water filters out of Japan. Okay, well, they all found their lane. You know, they love that product. They can tell you, you know, wake them up at 3 o'clock in the morning. They can give you a sales pitch on why you need that product and how have you lived this long hurricane without this product. You know, great. They found their passion. So, you know, find something that you really like as a product or service for that matter that you want to, you know, spend time with because you will, you know, direct selling, you got to spend the time. If you don't put the time in, and the good news with the time is it used to be go to meetings at hotels, right? You came home from work, you worked all day. Oh, I got to go to a meeting tonight. I don't really want to go. I'm tired. Hey, now 99% of communication is just what we're doing here. It's on Zoom. It's on other platforms like this. So, you know, you can come home from work, throw your shorts on, eat dinner with the family and, you know, go to your computer and you can still get some work done.
Oh, John, there's a lot of stuff there. I'm like, you know, I'm just waiting for you so I can hit a couple of markers there. Well, so there's, first of all, thank you for clarifying, you know, the world of, you know, network marketing, because I think where the controversy is more on the idea of like pyramid scheme kind of concept where people are like, you know, they're not comfortable with the concept itself. And to your point, depends on which company, it could be good or it can be a bad, you know, outcome, right? Now, of course, as you said, there's a bad, you know, player in any industry, no matter where you are, there's going to be a few companies that do it right and some that don't do it, you know, correctly, right? And they cause that. As you, the best example, you said it, car dealers. Not all salespeople are equal, but you have some that really make it a bad rep for all of us. By the way, that is like, you know, we always joke about this, you know, we're the second most hated people on the planet after lawyers, right? You know, it's a joke, right? But you know what? Everybody sells. Selling is stuff. And I love what you said. It's direct selling. And it could be selling you, selling a product or whatever of yours or whatever that you have. And it could be doing a chain sales where you have other people within, you know, your network, your, you know, I guess tree, and making it happen that way. And, you know, everybody makes a little buck on that. You've hit on all the big ones. And by the way, I did, engage with Herbalife way back in the days. I didn't push with them because my career took me, you know, busy on the insurance side, and I wound up just focusing on that. I've actually tried Amway. I've tried Equinox water filters at the time. This was like early 90s. You know, so I've tried a couple myself, but Herbalife was one that I actually liked because of the nutrition, you know, all the stuff. But this is completely irrelevant, but I do remember the first day I went to Herbalife, I got stuck in the elevator. You know, so I can never forget that. And not only that, I did something that is crazy, and most people will be like, what the hell did you just do? Actually, you know those elevators, the ones with the gate?
Yeah,
the old ones with the wheel. With your crank and you pull. So I got stuck in that one, and I complained, I screamed, nobody came. And I was just after Die Hard, the movie. So I actually went up the raft. I actually opened the hatch and went up to the other side and come out of the stuff. I did a stunt on my own, and I never forgot that. And it was Herbalife. So it's funny that you mentioned Herbalife, because that's kind of like my little highlight when I started with them. And I just didn't finish with them because, like I said, I was doing the insurance space, you know, and it was the health insurance, not the life insurance. So like MetLife and all these guys. So we do government programs, and that's where I've been, and, you know, Medicaid, long-term care, and Medicare. But you're right. So these are a few things. And I think what you said also about the idea of picking the right, you know, company, something that you have to have passion for everything you do and anything you do. Otherwise, it's going to be boring and you're not going to succeed. That's exactly what happens. Another thing that you talked about, which is very powerful, it's about how you run a team, leadership, you know, being conscious about, you know, your, you know, not favorite, but the people that are really, you know, out there doing stuff. They, like you said, the top guys are calling you, you know, they're hands-free. In general, you don't even handhold them. However, if they call, to your point, you know, there's got to be a reason, and that reason is important. You got to like drop everything to do that, because without them, you don't exist. And that's really something sometimes some of the managers, not leaders, lose, is that they think that they succeed because they are it. They're the best of the best. I don't care who you are. You're not the best unless your team is the best. Unless, you know, if they fail you and they bail on you, I mean, think about this. It's a rebellious, you know, team. They go away. You're stuck. You know, you're not as good as you think. I mean, maybe try another team. And if you do the same thing, it's going to be a repeat. So that's a big, actually, I think, if anything, we can highlight that to the bank for everyone watching and listening. I don't care what business you're in. It's a sales business. At the end of the day, there's a sales transaction. Whatever department you're in, you have, you know, people that are reporting to you. They're your gals and guys, and actually they're your team. Without them, you can't succeed. No one owns a P&L and has a staff, and they can do bad with the staff and expect a good P&L. It doesn't work that way. I mean, so whatever it is, you have KPIs that company gave you, you need to make sure that your team is doing it. Again, so thank you for bringing that up. That's a huge one. And it's always good to highlight those elements, even though sometimes you hear these things over and over in a lot of shows. But that's really what's out there. That's how you do it if you want to succeed. And you are a true example of success over the years. You've built, and I love what you said, you have your legacy. And it's funny you said something that I can relate to, is that because you were one of the pioneers, you know, people don't realize how much you put as a foundation to the industry. And, you know, today generations are using stuff. They don't even know where to source. And by the way, when I say I relate to it, it's the same thing. We started back in the early 90s in managed care, which was a concept that was just demonstrated at the time. Managed care was still new in the government program. And a lot of strategic stuff, sales stuff, tactics and stuff, we've developed before people even knew what they do with it. And today, they become the standards. And I have things that I've done that are still today, policy that I wrote back in the days that is still applicable in other industries or other agencies or insurance companies have adopted. They don't even know where that came from. And I can actually even give them the date where it started, you know, and as a joke about it. Like, for example, in New York, you'll see these RVs, like, you know, we call them COVs, community outreach vehicles, right? And now you see them in all telecom and all this and the other. Well, one of the first ones, if not the first one ever in the health industry, was ours. And I started it in Brooklyn in early 90s, you know, which was the first vehicle that sold insurance in the streets and do things, you know, as people may, you know, come to your neighborhood, basically. Yeah. And we changed spots and stuff. Instead of having a set office, we moved the office in mobile unit. And so that was something, just an example. And that's early 90s, where it was still not really a big thing. across, you know, the nation or across the industry. So, you know, stuff like that, you know, people don't realize it. You develop things, it becomes standard. And you know what? You're right. You don't want, it's not about the credit. You know what you did. You know what it did to the industry. You know your foundation. And that's actually humbling to know that you are, you know, you put a legacy out there, and there's nothing wrong with that. But again, all this also leads to what you said earlier, which is, again, your core topic of your podcast. There is no chance about what you said. Everything you said is work. And I love what you said. You cannot expect results doing the minimum. And I think that's a big problem. I see it. Listen, even in my own kids, you know, the expectations that I had when I was a kid, you know, from my parents, and what I have with my, you know, kids, it's a just different world. And you see a lot of the stuff today in generations where they want everything. And by the way, folks, don't take this the wrong way. This is just a reality. You want quick shortcuts, and sometimes they work, but there's really not a lot of shortcuts that can make you, you know, super rich overnight. Now, with the internet and stuff, maybe some people get lucky. They get, you know, a good streak and they make it happen. And that's okay. There's a percentage. Again, that's a 1%, you know, 2%, whatever, small percentage, not the population, not the whole group, right? So that's something. If you don't put the time and the energy and what it takes, the results will be equal to your input. But that's all there is. 5 hours, I love the analogy. You go to the gym, you pump 2 hours a week, and you're like, oh, you know, I'm gonna become, you know, the Hulk. No, you're not. You know, you're not gonna be Arnold, right? So it's just the way it is. Same thing. You diet, right? Oh, I want to look good and I want to be slim and I have six packs and stuff. You know, you can diet all you want. I mean, if you don't watch what you're eating correctly and you don't exercise and don't sleep well and do all the other stuff, it's still not going to do the same. So everything, work is the same. You want to be that number one start. By the way, in every sales structure, you're going to have your top tier, you know, reps, or like the A's, right? Or the 10%. And the job of a leader is to bring as many people to that 10% and move that 10% threshold to maybe a 50% of the team being at that level. And maybe, but you're always going to have top, middle ground, like your steady Eddies, and you have some bottom feeders that may not actually, you know, cut the muscles, as we would refer to it in the industry. But that doesn't mean anything. They're just not cut off of the stuff. And that's something else also to understand. Not everybody is going to be a good fit in the world of sales, and especially in network marketing, because again, it takes a lot of work. And you know, you got to pitch and talk and build, you know, your team, and you got to stay on top of the team, and the team has to stop on the team. And that's the other thing, because here's the thing, without everybody participating and selling and pushing, it just becomes a line under you. There's nothing there. I mean, it'll be like a dead end. Like, you're having a lot of people lined up, but for no reason, nobody's doing anything. So therefore, there's no results, right? So that's no. I mean, am I getting the picture wrong about, you know, how it works? I mean, every single one in that line has to produce. Otherwise, it's just like everybody. Yeah, they might be buying, but then they'll buy the first time, and then that's the end of it. And so now they only, you just have another strike, you know, another, you know, arrow that's pointing somebody that is completely absent. And that's not something you can't build an empire, you know, with that, you know, formula. If you're not on top of the team, if you're not really day in, day out, you know, talking, tracking, you know, and building the next leaders that will actually run good teams, good meetings, get people, you know, enthusiastic about what they sell. You know, to your point, if you have people that are just doing it for the wrong reasons, it may not work. I also love, John, what you said about the idea that this can start as a part-time for a lot of reasons. And people, we all need money. And by the way, money is not the end, but it is a means to the end. And we need to have, the more you have of it, it makes life a lot easier. The least you have of it, you struggle a little bit more because, let's face it, the economy, you talked about Reagan era. You know, we have a little bit of some of that struggle today in our economies, right? And so people are struggling, and there's inflation, there's that. So some extra money does not hurt. We want some of that, but how you get to it? You might have a career. You know, I mean, in my case, for example, my career picked up nicely, so I didn't need that. But even when I was actually at the top, I've always had something on the side. That's just me personally. I always tell this to people. I never put my eggs in one basket. I'm always doing more things, and I always have a second stream of revenue that should be coming in. So even in business, there's 3-4 businesses happening at the same time, and they just build up slowly. And that's how I do it. And so that's just my formula. Now, everybody's different. But the idea, don't think that, you know, you get one source, because if that source is shut down, and that's something you said earlier, you had a good product, you were doing good, FDA stops you, what are you going to do? You can't even sell, you can't even give it away. That didn't disappoint you. That didn't, like, stop you. You just kind of find another way. And that's really, you know, that's chapeau to you. That's hats to you, because that's what made you who you are. You know, you have that success, you know, personality.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I think back to the last 5 years or so, there's two words that come to mind: pivot and agility. So here's what happened, right? So my other book, Leaving Nothing to Chance, is not on my desk. I apologize. I just got back from this convention in California, so my desk is a mess. But I wrote this book, Moving Up 2020, which came out December 2019. Leaving Nothing to Chance was with a different group of people that I had worked with on it. Okay, I was like, it's my writing, but it's other, you know, you got a team of, you know, all sorts of different people working with it. That book comes out in February 2020. So I'm supposed to be in 60 cities over the next 12 months. Okay. And my books are also in Spanish. So I'm going to be in Mexico, Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, Guatemala, Spain, and the English world, US, Canada, Germany, which, you know, everybody speaks both. Okay. And the UK. So I'm supposed to be in all these countries. Like everything's mapped out for the next 12 months. I'm going to be doing all these meetings for my regular network marketing company. And then my friends in the industry that have downlines in those cities, it's like, okay, I'll do my meeting on Monday and I'll swing over and I'll do their meeting on Tuesday with the book and meet some of their people. And, you know, I'm not going to recruit their people. They know my ethics. It's like, I'm not there to recruit their people. All right. So I got all this geared up. I mean, we're ready to go. This is a plan and airlines and hotel. Anyway. Well, you know what happened. Everybody knows what happened. So, you know, when it hits the fan, sometime in February, I was in Monterrey, Mexico, and I was flying back to Canada. We were still living part-time in Canada. My son was playing hockey up there. And I came back to Dallas on the way to kind of check on my oldest daughter, who was living at our house at the time. And I come back from Monterrey, and I'm watching the news, and I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. There's no flights. I can't go anywhere. So I'm like, well, maybe I drive back to Canada. I can't get across the border. So I'm like, well, my wife is up there with our two younger kids. I'm down here with my older kid. And I'm like, all these plans. Monterrey, by the way, I sold 3,000 books in a day. Okay. And we took orders that went to Amazon for probably another five. Like, I'm like, we're killing it. Well, there goes that idea. Okay. By the way, books, I mean, now you can do all this stuff online. And even 5 years ago, you really couldn't. Now you can do it all online, which is much cheaper. I just did a new book on johnsolander.com that people can download for free if they want. But anyway, I got all this money invested too. Well, what am I going to do? Keyword, pivot. I'm going to pivot. How am I going to pivot? Think of it like basketball. If I'm away from the rim and you're coming down the court, you throw me the ball, I got to turn around and face the basket to throw the ball in. Right? I pivot and I go, well, let me start a podcast. Well, I might as well call it the title of the new book, Leave Nothing to Chance, right? Because at the end of the day, you know, that title came about for, it's a long story. I don't know if we'll have time for it or not, but it came about because of a philosophy that I have about preparation. Okay, how do you always have to be prepared? And anyway, so that was the first pivot, okay, was pivoting to podcasting. Thinking I'll do this for 6 months, this COVID thing will be over and I'll just, you know, I'll stop doing it. Okay. Where does the agility come in? The agility, about a year ago, I started to say, now I'm 64 now. I'm not a young guy, okay? But I don't think old. I, you know, like if I'm with 64-year-old people, I'm like, they're talking about stuff. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? I'm talking about going to the gym and, you know, eating right and, you know, doing all kinds of things. And they're talking about how they want to retire. Well, good for them. Anyway, so about a year ago, I start realizing, boy, this AI thing is not going to go away. This AI thing is going to run the world. So you either go like this, I'm not interested, or you go like this and you say, I'm interested. I need to know what I could know. I don't need to understand it like a machine learning engineer understands it. I just need to understand it so how I can apply it in my business. I get an email from a guy one day telling me that he loved my show and he'd like to be a guest. Good. Then I get him on the show and he tells me afterwards, what do you think of my email? I said, oh, I loved it. It was very flattering. Thank you so much. He goes, I didn't write it. Oh, you virtual assistant? Nope. AI. AI wrote it? This was like the best email I ever got. I mean, just from a context standpoint, right? I start to look at what this guy's doing, and I start to work with some of his AI tools. And all of a sudden now I'm doing more podcasts. I'm growing my network marketing business. I'm doing speeches, okay, at different seminars on branding all over the United States. I'm busier now at 64 than I was at 54, and I was pretty busy then, right? Because of AI. Now, AI was the agility. Think of agility for, in a sports sense, right? Agility is what? You know, you can go, you know, this way, or you can go this way, or you can do both. You got to be agile. You got to be, number one, you got to be willing to pivot. And number two, you got to be agile. You can't say, well, 20 years ago, we built businesses go doing Tuesday night and Thursday night meetings at Holiday Inns and Saturday morning trainings at the Holiday Inn. You tell somebody 25 years old come to the Holiday Inn for a meeting, they don't even know where the Holiday Inn is. And they'd be like, why the heck would I go to a meeting there? Why? What are you talking about? Why would I go? Can't you do it by phone? Can't you text me? Can't I get on Zoom? Why would I go there? No, I want to do it the way I did 25 years ago. That's great, but you're going to be pretty lonely. You got to apply to the times. And that's where pivoting and agility came in for me, and it can be for your listeners as well. You got to be willing in your business and in your life to pivot and be agile, okay? Now, in my case, it was podcasting and AI. In their case, it might be, hey, they haven't been in the gym in 20 years, okay? They need to get back there, or they need to clean up their eating, or they need to do some other facet of their life that they see is not keeping up with the times. The other thing, the other key word for me, Hurricane, is engagement. You know, you and I spoke a little bit off air about, you know, why do we do podcasts, right? And why do a lot of people, frankly, start doing podcasts and they stop doing podcasts? Because they have one, once again, you know, I'm going to do three podcasts and I'm going to be bigger than Joe Rogan. No, you're not. You know, it doesn't work that way. Okay. You know, Joe's where he is because he's Joe, right? And you're not going to be, what's his name in New York that a big disc jockey? Howard Stern. You're not going to be him either. And you're not going to be Steve Aoki. I mean, you're just not going to be any of these people overnight. All of those guys put in the time and the work. But I'll make this point. Why should you do a podcast? Engagement. You and I talked about this. We both have met so many great people. Some that we've done business with, some that we'll never do business with, but we just know them. Some that you'll make a referral to. For example, I made a referral to a guy that sells a machine. Okay, he sold 10 machines at $70,000 a machine. Okay, and I got a check from the guy I introduced him to. Okay, introducing one podcast guest to another podcast guest. They did business. The guy bought 10 of these 10 $70,000 machines, and the guy sent me a check that I wasn't even expecting. I did cash it, by the way. Okay. But my point is this: you don't know who you're going to meet, and you don't know why you're going to meet them, but you're going to meet people that you're going to engage with in conversation that may lead to business or may never lead to business, but you're going to know a whole lot more people. And what's the big challenge in network marketing? What's the big problem in insurance? What's the big problem in whatever your listeners do for a living? Eventually, you run out of the people you know. You've either sold them, they got your product, or they're never going to buy your product. And it doesn't matter even if they have the same last name. At the end of the day, you need to constantly make new contacts. So if you want to engage and build contact capital, I don't believe there's a better way to do it, frankly, than hosting a podcast and getting to know people and interviewing them. And you know, once again, you don't have to have a million followers. Just build it, okay? And the followers will come eventually. People start to hear about you, et cetera, et cetera. But to me, this is the new media. I'll make one other point on that if I can, Hurricane. And that's if you go back to this last election, okay? And I'm not being political here, folks. I'm not taking sides, okay? But Donald Trump did over 100 podcasts. Kamala Harris did 4. Now, when you think about that, there's a rationale that Trump didn't know himself. His kid told him this, and it makes a lot of sense. People under 30, 35, they do not watch CNN, Fox, or MSNBC. Matter of fact, my three kids don't even own TVs. Not for any reason, but the fact that they don't own one. Their life is the cell phone, right? You know, they want to know something, they pick up their phone, right? So all of a sudden, you get one candidate speaks to 100 separate audiences of probably anywhere between, you know, a couple of thousand listeners to, you know, Joe Rogan with millions of listeners. The other person gets on 4 shows. Well, I don't care what you're selling, if it's politics or if it's multi-level or if it's insurance or whatever. The person that does 100 versus the person that does 4 is probably going to win 9 times out of 10. To that point, as we get into the next election cycle, right, which we're rapidly getting into 2026 and 2028, people like you and I become really relevant to some of these people who go, hey, these guys actually have people listening to them. Yep. So there's a whole nother aspect to this. According to one of the things I read, I don't know if this number's right, but it's gone from 3.7 million to over 4.3 million English-speaking podcasts alone on a daily basis. That's growth.
Huge.
You know?
I'm listening to you. There's so much out there. If you're in business, you need to have those. And you cannot get stuck. I love what you said. You cannot do stuff you do today that you've done 20 years ago. It just doesn't work that way. Where that ship sailed, that technology is gone. It's obsolete. Matter of fact, we just did a show live on Friday about AI and you know, the how AI is going to be the next wave of everything. And it is already, you know, swooping everybody. So if you're not in the wave, you're not taking that little, you know, nice ride, you're gone. I mean, the train's gone, the plane's gone. It's like that joke about cruising, and I love cruising. The most expensive picture is the one you at the deck, you know, at the dock rather, and the actual ship is sailing away. Well, that's exactly it. You don't want to do that, and you want to be on. And I love what you said, podcasting, right? You know, I mean, we had different reasons why we got into podcasts, but really, it is at the end for engagement, to bring information and stuff, and also to connect with people. Like I told you, this is the Resourceful and Informative Network, because actually every show that I have has a guest with their own resource and information and source of whatever it is in business. If you need a service, I have that service, you know, already ready for you. You just click and go and link up with them or listen to them, get a little bit of information. If you like what you hear, you can now have a service, you know, literally you have a menu of people that you can actually touch on. You don't have to, it's like having to Google. You have this in addition, right? So these are the things that you have to do, and that the agility, being able to move things. You don't get stuck when you get stuck. I mean, this is not, you know, quicksand, right? You got to move. Now, quicksand is a different story. If you move too much, you're going to go down. There's a way to get out of it. But you have to be able to navigate change as it happens and see how it works and how it can benefit you. So thank you for bringing those two. Those are huge. And I love what you said. You know, it's a law of averages, a law of numbers. Then the more numbers, the more people you engage, the better you're going to get results. I love what you said. I mean, it's a good example. You can't go wrong. I mean, 4 shows, 100 shows. As a matter of fact, I think what Joe Rogan was one of the people that promoted, you know, even the election to a degree and pushed. I mean, just think about how many people, like you said, he got like 10 million, you know, downloads or whatever. You know, that's a lot of numbers. You know, and by the way, I love what you said. No one, you're starting, it's you. This is John Sullivan. This is Hurricane H. We are our own entity. We have our own flavor and so on and so forth. Everybody's got, I'm not seeking to be John Rogan. Joe, he is him. I'm me. You are you. And everybody's got a different angle and so on and so forth. But we do have an engagement. We do have a certain, you know, level of information that we're bringing out there. And it's good work that we do. And all, I give heads up to everyone that's out there that is doing, you know, some sort of, you know, information that's given out there. And yes, people do it to promote their services and things like that. I love what you did. You have a book. It sucks. We have a pandemic. What are you going to do? Oh, you're going to cry and 12 months are gone. Or let me see what's up. And a lot of people did that. Exactly that. Okay, it happened. What do we do? Do we make, you know, the end of the world is here? Or do we make like, well, let's make the best out of this thing and cook well and do things, you know, healthy and whatever. And let's make people start up businesses. People changed careers, literally, and succeed, became millionaires, actually, since COVID, right? A lot of things happen, but it depends. It's how you approach things. And that's really it. People sometimes don't see that.
And it's how you see the world. Okay. Like I see the world a little different at this age than I did, say, 20 years ago. Okay. And what I see in the world now is that if you don't apply the modern technology to your business, you will fall behind. I mean, basically, AI or die is reality.
I love that. That's
a good one. I hate to say that. But look at it from another standpoint, too, Hurricane, right? If you look at the overall economy, there are tens of thousands of jobs that are going to disappear. Like, for example, I was just in Anaheim, okay, for the Fit Expo. And there's apparently a restaurant there that one of the guys, matter of fact, I'm interviewing this guy tomorrow. He's in the sea salt business. And his name's Brian, nice young guy. And anyway, Brian was telling me and showing me pictures. He had gone to this restaurant that's 100% run by robots. And Elon Musk owns it. And it's somewhere there around Anaheim. I couldn't tell you the name offhand. People out there, you know, you certainly probably know it. And he showed me it. And I'm thinking, okay, that means there's no waiters, no waitresses, nobody to take your money. Okay, everything's automated. And that's kind of scary in one respect, because there's so many businesses like that, right? Jeff Bezos last Christmas did the same thing. He laid off, I forget how many people, 13,000 people, I think, a couple weeks before Christmas. Not the nicest thing to do, by the way, a couple weeks before Christmas, but they were replaced by robots that I think were like 30 grand a piece. So here's my point. You're going to have to learn pivoting and agility if you're in any business that you could be replaced by a robot. Okay. I mean, some of the robots, I do some work for a company called Top Doctor Magazine. Okay. I do some podcasts for them, and I work with the owner of that magazine, John Hyland. And John shows me a thing on the weekend of this girl, beautiful woman, who's advertising for Top Doctor. It's an AI robot. I'm like, I wanted to ask her for a date if my wife wasn't around. I mean, you know, I'm being funny right now. My wife will hear the show. She's probably listening. But I mean, like this beautiful woman, I'm like, oh my God, she's not real. She's a robot, for God's sakes. Point being, 10 years ago, that would have been a model. That would have been a human being. That robot, somewhere along the line, you are paying for that robot services to somebody. But my point is this, don't let it scare you. Let this new economy excite you, whether you're an old guy, whether you're a little bit younger guy, whether you're a young person listening to this show, let it excite you. But learn how to use it for your purposes and don't sit there and say, well, COVID happened. I got these books. What am I going to do? Oh, I'll figure out a solution. Okay. Yeah, I'll give you another one. When I started way back with Herbalife in 83, I was so broke. My vehicle to go to and from Seton Hall was a $1,000 U.S. mail Jeep that I bought from the post office surplus. When I started that business, eventually it grew, and I was living in Bergen County, which you know where that is. Everybody else doesn't. But from Newark Airport, it's about a good 25, 30 miles to Newark Airport. What the company used to do is they would air freight your product into the airport. So in our case, the business I was building was you know, Newark Airport was the place the product would go. Well, I figured out an angle. Again, I pivoted. I took that mail Jeep. Now, remember, mail Jeep, you know, was one driver. There's nobody else that could sit in it. Well, guess what? That thing would fit about $40,000 of inventory from the company. So all my older distributors, because I'm in my early 20s, single at the time, my older distributors, they didn't want to go to the airport. They would break it down, and UPS would bring it to your house, take it the extra 3 or 4 days. Well, I figured out I'll speed up the sales cycle. If people have product, they'll sell it, because the products were really easy to sell at that time. Okay. And I'm like, so I'm going to speed up the sales cycle, which makes me more money, but I'm also going to charge 3% freight for anybody's product I pick up. So I pick up $1,000 of product for you. I'm charging you $30. Pays my gas and my tolls. If I have $10,000 of product, I pick up $300 extra. Okay. Well, that's like an extra source of income. So I took this funky looking mail Jeep that people used to laugh at me. Okay. I used to have to go out. The girl I was dating at the time, fortunately, she had a car. She had to drive all the time when we went on a date. But my point is, I took a negative that I could have complained and whined about, and I turned it to a positive. I turned it to an asset. Are you taking your liabilities in life, whatever they are, and saying, how do I turn them to possibilities? It's all how you see. Do you see opportunity ahead? Or do you see, oh my God, I don't understand AI. It's going to replace my job. I'm going to live under a bridge. Well, if you think like that, that's probably what's going to happen. But if you think, you know what, I'm going to figure out what I can figure out. I don't have to figure out how AI works, no more than I have to know how my car works. If I turn the key and it goes, I understand how a car goes. It's the same thing with AI. Don't let it scare you. embrace it, put your arms around it and say, where does it fit my insurance business? Where does it fit my multi-level? Where does it fit my car dealership? Where does it fit my whatever? How do I fit it with what I'm doing? Okay. And embrace it and use it, because that's what it's there for. It's there to be used and utilized and grow people, not robots. Okay. That's how I see it. I wish I was 24 instead of 64, because boy, what an exciting time we're living in. Who knows what's next? I mean, there's so many smart people in the world that are working on these different developments that, it's just a very exciting time to be alive, frankly.
You know, John, I'm laughing because you're really, really hitting on one of the main important things that anyone out there watching and listening today, anytime, is opportunities are always around us. It's whether you seize them or not. You really did exactly that. You see something, you use something. People see it as a negative, as you said, nothing, a beat-up car, whatever. You turn into an asset and money-making machine. AI is only a tool. That's the whole thing. I mean, you're right. There are jobs that may be replaced. And the people, and something like that, I was watching the show the other day, the people that will succeed in the next wave of the future here and with everything are the people who will adapt, as you said, you know, to the AI world. And be able to engage and use it effectively. Use it to whatever, industry you're in. It doesn't matter. Restaurants, yes. I mean, dude, I actually was having lunch the other day. And yeah, a robot served us, literally. I mean, we place the order and this machine comes in and then it gives you the actual tray. Thank you very much. Have a great day. Enjoy your meal. I mean, literally. So you're right. This is already happening. You got cars that don't have drivers. They will park where you and take you places. So this is a real thing, folks. It is a matter of time to either accept or reject. If you reject it, well, what's your alternative? You can complain, you can bitch and whatever you want to do, but it's not going to change anything. It is happening. It is going to happen faster than you can expect it. You got to get with the program. And that's really, in corporate world, I've seen that also. A lot of people, I mean, we just made a joke, in a different show. I made a joke about in a different show, because there are people that still, in order for you to get a job, you got to do a PowerPoint. I mean, this is a joke. I mean, literally. I mean, really? I mean, PowerPoint is it. That's how you scale someone with expertise, that you're going to get them into a role that you need desperately. I mean, I have AI, literally, I'm talking to you right now. I have AI on this side, I have AI on this side. My programs are running. There's different things working with me right now. They're my pals. I mean, I literally have their names. I mean, there's one actually called Hurricane X. that's my actually, my duplicate AI. Like, that's me person, like my personality and everything, and it's an AI version of me. I have Echo X. I mean, there's some AIs that I have, created that are actually, they know my business. They know how I operate. I have one that's Mic Drop. It's my NBC studio stuff. So all I can tell you is I learned AI about a year ago, and I did learn to generate it, to create it, or to, as you said, to engineer it. I learned how it operates and how I can maximize it. And actually, the people are doing it. They're already doing it. I mean, there's a study. I think I saw an article or post or something. 96% of content is predicted to actually become AI generated in the next few years. Yeah. I mean, when you think about that, hello. I mean, you either going to be sleeping in the prehistoric era, or, as I love what you said, AI or diamond. This is, I'm going to have to use that line. Or you have to trademark that one. That's a good one.
Somebody probably already did, but that's how I see it. It's like, look, use it. When I started in business all those years ago, you started out talking to people. And then when you started to need some new contacts, you either ran an ad in a newspaper, or you went to, Kinko's, and you printed off 1,000 flyers, and you went out and stuck them on cars and cigarette machines and wherever. I used to go up and down the New Jersey Parkway, by the way, because I lived off exit 165. I'd go down the parkway all the way. Every telephone booth I'd stop, and I'd stick flyers up. Okay? And I had a flyer that I put together said, I need success-driven salespeople. And that's how I recruited. It has a little tear tags on the bottom, right? Well, today you wouldn't do that, okay? People would laugh at you if you did that, right? But then all of a sudden we got into cassette tapes, okay? And then cassette tapes got replaced by
DVDs.
And then DVDs got replaced and so on and so forth, right? So the point is this, AI is just a business tool. All right. It's not here to replace every human being on the planet. OK, I mean, that's not what its intention is. Its intention is to be a tool for us to use. So don't be afraid of it. See where it fits your little lane, so to speak. You don't have to become, they call these guys machine learning. I'm calling them engineers. Like they're actually programmers. They're actually computer programmers. And they're super smart, and they make a ton of money. And we've got like seven of them now that are working with us on different projects. I mean, like, and they're young kids, and they're super duper smart. Well, take advantage of their brains. Let them be figure out all the stuff you need, and then say, how do I use it to build my thing? Right? Utilize it. No different than cassette tapes and DVDs and all the other stuff that's existed. You know, now this is a little more sophisticated, I'll admit. But at the end of the day, it's the world that we're going to live in this world for the balance of our lives, quite frankly. And it's going to get better. It's already gotten better, but it's going to get even better than we think, you know?
You're right. And again, this is, listen, I mean, folks, The bottom line here through the discussion is that there's a lot of nuggets that each one of us should actually take, apply, and use, make them like part of our vocabulary, our day-to-day activities, or our lifestyles and principles, such as what you said, the pivot, the adaptation, the agility, you know, all the stuff, you know, seeing an opportunity, moving through the opportunity, you know, always looking at what the next best thing and, you know, working harder. There's nothing by chance. I mean, you know, you got to make the changes, you know, you got to improve your skills. All these are things that are applicable. They're real, they work. And you know what? Anyone that's applied those in their lives is going to be a success story, has been a success story. And if you look at anyone out there that you actually admire and you're going to seek their history, you're going to find exactly that these items were part of their history. They were part of their legacy. They're part of their journey. And yes, it was not overnight. I love, we go back to that whole overnight 7 year success. You know, there is no true overnight. I mean, no one, unless you win a lottery, that's a different story. And even that, you probably bought a ticket a couple of days before, you know, before it happened, right? But at the end of the day, you can buy it a minute before actually the countdown and you win, but that would be like the extreme, you know, far area here. But at the end of the day, everybody that's successful puts a lot of time, a lot of energy, definitely more than the average person. That's how they do it, because you can't be average and expect, you know, top results. There's just, you know, there are laws of physics, laws of engagement. These are the laws of engagement. You cannot break them. There's no way around them. There's no shortcut or detour. I mean, you can find some loopholes maybe, you know, just to find maybe a way to skip, you know, things. And sometimes it's a good way, but most of the time you can't have that and you won't have that. So that's really, you know, again, this is a 1 hour that we try to cram in a lot of stuff, but the stuff that John shared with us today, take it to the bank, folks. This is coming from a success person, a successful person, and a success story over, was it 3-4 decades already of real work. I mean, you know, and by the way, you look terrific, man. So, you know, I think whatever you do, you start with Herbalife, you've been in nutrition stuff, you like your stuff, you're actually taking care of, you're managing well.
You know what? I still hit the gym religiously. I eat right. You know, lots and lots of fruits, vegetables, and water, frankly. I obviously take my own nutrition supplement that I market with the company that I'm with. But beyond that, you know, yeah, I mean, look, you can live a long time and you can have several careers even, you know. I mean, I've had within what I do, I've had several careers over the years. And now is the most fun part. Like I said, I'm having fun now. I'm doing stuff now that I didn't think I was going to do. You know, but it's great. And I appreciate being on the show, man. It was great. And we got to return the favor and get you out there with our audience as well.
Anytime. Just let me know. I'm in. Well, I appreciate that. And yeah, listen, I enjoyed it myself. This is fun. I mean, I love these discussions, especially when it comes to the business structures and things like that. And the really the formulas of success, because this is one of them. And really it's motivation. And really for people out there, you know, you need sometimes to hear these things to just get you. Sometimes we get a little bit of a deviation from whatever our path, or get a little, you know, tired or stressed out. And you hear something like this and like, I needed this. This talk really makes. And by the way, podcast is actually where it's happening. People actually tune in, you know, into podcasts day in, day out, and it's changing their lives, you know, and they're picking thing. So I listen to my own shows. I listen to a lot of shows. You know, and it's funny, sometimes I listen to my shows because I really enjoy some of the guests and I listen to them again because I want to absorb what they said. Because when you communicate in the show, it's a little different. But when you listen to it, you get more. And sometimes I read like, oh, I missed that. I didn't even hear that, you know, because you just, there's so much stuff that's going on. But, you know, I listen to a lot of folks out there and, you know, it's great. And by the way, on a network, we have also a lot of podcasters and every one of those shows comes in with terrific, tremendous information and level of stuff that is, if you take it all, you know, I mean, just apply 10% of that in life and you're going to see an improvement. 1%, you'll start seeing improvement.
Well, you know, the other thing is, I know we've run a long time here, but the other thing is that the content with a podcast is what I call evergreen. Yes. Meaning that, yeah, you're going to put this show out whenever you're going to put it out, next couple of weeks, right? People are going to hear it the first time and go, who's this John Solider guy, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, X amount of people are going to listen to that. But a year from now, somebody might go, who's this guy he's talking to? Oh, multi-level, I'm interested in that, or whatever. And, you know, that's the other thing is that these shows live on forever. I've got people that go back and listen to shows I did 5 or 6 years ago. You know, or I guess, well, it's about five and a half years now. But you know, point being, it's like people go back and they listen to a show and they'll tell me, oh, I just listened to your show with so-and-so. I'm thinking, why did I do that? You know, that's when you know you're getting older. It's like, what year did I interview that guy? You know, but it happens. It's cool.
You know, it's funny, John, you said that because it happens. I mean, look how many shows on Netflix or programs, right, that you never heard of. And someone say, hey, listen, this is a great show. Just listen to it. And you're like, well, how did I miss this? Or a series, like, oh my God, I'm hooked on this. You catch it, it's like, where the hell was this? That's exactly what's going to happen to any show that's out there. And you're right, they're evergreen, which means, and by the way, they're multi, like we broadcast in all podcasts. I mean, over 50 platforms out there worldwide, plus our own radio, plus the actual visual everywhere. You can even watch us on TV. You can download the app. There's so much places, so many places where you can watch. And this, I'm just talking about us. Yeah. But this show also, you're going to get a copy. You're going to promote it through your own network. And so on and so forth. So everybody has the ability to access it. And today, tomorrow, it doesn't matter. And 1% at a time, if we can help them to be successful, we already beat, you know, our legacy already in there. Because at the end of the day, one day we're not going to be here. This is also going to be behind us as real information that people can use for generations. It's amazing. So it's a love. I love this work, man.
And I do too. And you're great at it, my friend. And just keep doing what you're doing. You're inspiring people and you're leading people. And look, that's why we're here. To your point, we're not going to be here forever. You know. So let's impart all the wisdom that we possibly can.
So just before we leave, John, you know, how can people reach out to you? You know, if they want to get the book or you just connect with you and talk to you about business.
Books are on Amazon. JohnSolider.com is a website that you can reach me at, and you can see the books on there. You can see the podcasts on there. If you want to go to the podcast, Leave Nothing to Chance, or you can just go on my name, John_Solider on YouTube. You can get there, and we're on Rumble now, and my wife's sticking me on all kinds of different things. I have no idea where else we might be, but I know I'm on Rumble now as well as YouTube in a big way. Just hey, reach out. And for that matter, on Facebook, you want to Facebook friend me, you know, just John Solider, and, you know, let's become Facebook friends. But yeah, and I'll talk to anybody. I mean, you know, if you need a little business advice, okay, and I can help you, I have no problem doing that. I had a lot of people have helped me along the way, frankly. So, you know, I'd like to pass it on.
Thank you so much. And yeah, we will definitely have the links in the description of the show so people can connect with you directly. As I said earlier, you know, they'll click on your picture also on our website and they'll be able to actually reach out to you. We'll have these reels, you know, on the social media and of course all the other network stuff that we've mentioned. So John, thank you so much for being with us. It's been real. I enjoyed every minute. And yes, we exceeded the hour. You know what? Who cares? It's just good stuff.
Listen, you know, a lot of wisdom on both sides of this camera. You know, so hopefully we help some people, most importantly.
I hope so. And yeah, I mean, I'm pretty convinced that we will. And so, hey, with that, folks, I hope you enjoyed our show and discussion. You got quite a few nuggets here to take home. And if not for you, maybe someone, you know, will, you know, definitely benefit from them. So that being said, I'm Hurricane H. We'll be talking soon. New day, new show, new topic. Bye for now.